Billiken fans, welcome back. It's Zach Miller and Peter Hale. This is the Midtown Madness podcast. Before we get going, thank you so much for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. Also, make sure you drop a comment down below. If you want to chime in on anything we're talking about, a lot of things going on. It's very cool when you guys make your voices heard in the comments section. And thank you for those that have been doing it so far. It's season four. Once again, the Midtown Madness podcast is brought to you by Two Men in a Garden. Pete, one of my favorite days out of the year was Saturday. And I can't tell you a better 420 snack for the hangout than Two Men in a Garden salsa. I hung out with some buddies. Watched the City game, celebrated the holiday, and enjoyed some Two Men in a Garden salsa to a City draw. You can't beat it. It's so good. And you know what? It's not terrible for you because you can get that sugar-free. And that stuff still cooks. It really does. It's local. It tastes amazing. And you can pick up their many products at any local grocery store or online at twomeninagarden.com. If you're particular about your salsa, that's where you want to go because sometimes the individual stores don't have a certain flavor in stock. Follow them on all social media at twomensalsa on Instagram and Twitter. They've been very active on social media lately, especially with everything, all the good vibes happening among the Billiken universe, so to speak. Pete, we need to have a serious discussion. I need to figure out how I am going to explain why I'm dressed as a 20-year-old college basketball player for Halloween.
For Halloween, huh, Zach?
Yeah.
I mean, I think by now most people within the sound of our voices probably know what's up.
Yes. It's funny. I was super excited for this announcement. And I think I think I might've been more excited, for everything that comes along with the commitment, the opportunity for merchandising, all the blog posts, all the, Field of 68 was all over it. All the local outlets are all over it. Just the buzz that it would create. And I got my fill of that, I think. But it's exciting. It's incredibly exciting for the sole purpose that it's going to make the Billikens better. And Pete, what is that announcement?
This weekend, Zach, a sophomore center from Indiana State, a transfer named Robbie Avila, committed to St. Louis University, signed immediately, and everything changed, Zach. Everything changed.
The vibes are unbelievable right now in Midtown. He committed Saturday afternoon on the Field of 68, and his signing, like you said, was official right after it. Let's go ahead and, do we want to get into kind of the segment and how it all unfolded? Do we want to talk about our reactions? How should we start this?
Yeah, let's talk about how it went down first, because he announced basically after he got home from his visit, which started in St. Louis on Thursday night. We know he stayed across, based on his Instagram stories, we know he stayed across the street from Busch Stadium downtown. I guess that would be what, the Marriott
that was Hilton at the ballpark.
The ballpark Hilton, sorry. Yeah. I'm picturing the buildings, but I think it's changed or whatever. Anyway, so we know he was there. We know he went to Capitol Grill for dinner with a big group. And we know he got a campus tour and that everything well. It was pretty interesting, Zach. He decided to announce his commitment on the Field of 68, which is a college basketball media site and, account, a social media account. And
they have a podcast and a TV and a video show, a YouTube show.
Rob Doster, is that how you say his last name?
Two of my not favorite media. I mean, I don't find them. I don't find them as stinky as many do. But like, I just really don't have an opinion of them.
And Jeff Goodman was the other one, and they were in a little bit of a kerfuffle a couple months ago because they were coming down pretty hard on an amateur documentarian who had put some stuff on YouTube in a, you know, low budget documentary,
about
Providence basketball that hinted at an Ed Cooley affair. And so these guys came after him hard, and then there was a big backlash against them. So anyway, that's who those guys are. I don't know why Robbie picked them to announce, but they are one of the more prominent.
He had been on their show before. So I think he did two interviews, major interviews in the lead up to, I guess, the NIT or March Madness in general. He did it with the Field of 68, and then he was on the Pat McAfee show.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool. Well, yeah, I mean, like when I popped it on, there were over 5,000 viewers already watching live right before the announcement. So at 4:04 p.m. St. Louis time is when he called it. And then within a few minutes, they were over 11. They're like going toward 12,000 viewers. I don't know if they ever got over 12, but a lot of people were watching this, you know, this little announcement, Zach. I mean, it was like 12 minutes long. It wasn't a huge thing, but tons of people popped in to see this live, see the announcement. You know, it was a lot of SLU fans, a lot of Indiana State fans, but it was crazy to me. Like the fans who are not affiliated with either of our schools seemed very out of touch with how this recruitment was going.
Yes.
Because all along to us, it was like pretty obvious that he was coming to SLU. Like we never heard anything suggesting that he was going anywhere else.
Well, the interesting part, I think, was Jeff Goodman or whoever tweets out from the Field of 68 account that the commitment might surprise you. Now, there are many ways to take this. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, Jeff Goodman's being, you know, smarmy, trying to clickbait engagement farm, all this. And I mean, I don't know, because like you said, people who weren't following this really had no clue what was going to happen. And that was like, I mean, there were people that were still saying like Illinois, DePaul,
UConn,
Kentucky. So I don't know, maybe this did surprise people that weren't necessarily paying, like the kind of people that wouldn't be in the college basketball subreddit.
Well, I think one of the reasons that a lot of people who were just probably not following the ins and outs of this were surprised is because places like The Athletic had him rated the number 3 overall transfer in the portal, period. Not number 3 at his position, but like period. Like so normally at that level, you're only talking about the blue bloods, right? Like portal recruiting is the number 1 priority for a lot of these schools now. And if he's a top 3 player in the portal, according to some places, I mean, that's a big deal. So people automatically are never going to think of St. Louis. They're just going to go right to, oh, where could he go? Who has a positional need at the 4 or 5 who might be able to take him? I think that's probably really all they're thinking, right? I mean, he's a unique player. He's a great player. Jimmerson compared him to Jokic, the way he kind of runs that point center position. It was pretty interesting though, Zach, because like a lot of fans think he's going to another place, right? Up leading up to this. And when he talked to the Field of 68 in this little interview they did with him, he said he did hear from a lot of other schools like ACC, bunch of power conference schools. He said it was a lot, but I feel like it handled it well. And I got to ask you, what about the do not contact designation? Because he went into the portal with do not contact, right? You can either put your contact information in or you can check the box that says do not contact.
Yeah, I think this one, I tweeted it out in a response because I think, can't remember which A10 Twitter account said it. It was either Davidson or Loyola affiliated. I think it was the Ramble, the two Ramblers podcast or whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like, wait, what? What about that do not contact? Like, is that not tampering? And I think either I settled on one of two things here, and you can let me know what you think, but I think that either Goodman just kind of asked that question because it's hot to like talk about how crazy the portal is and how like it really setting the tone for, I guess, kind of this being a an interesting, why this commitment is as interesting as it is, right? And Robbie may not have known this was even coming. So at that point, you give a whatever the person wants to hear. You give the company line and make it sound as cool as possible. So, now, or it could have been they had planned to, they were just like, okay, we're going to talk about this. And then I'm going to ask, you know, how was it having all the schools talk to you? And you're going to tell, well, it's crazy, you know? And that's always possible too. And either way, I don't know if I give a shit.
Well, in the end, the right thing happened. You know, I mean, I don't know either. What I do know is that when you look up what that means, on3.com says players can opt to add a do not contact designation on the transfer portal entry, which means schools are unable to communicate with that player unless the player initiates communication first. It adds that the transfer portal database is private and cannot be accessed by the public, which is a good idea. But I don't think he would have just been initiating contact with other schools. I mean, there's always the chance he has like an NIL agent, a representative of some kind who may be initiating contact just to kind of put the feelers out there and kind of see what his market value is so that they can go, hey, we want to come to SLU, but can you guys get us in this ballpark, right? Because he did acknowledge later on in his interview, this actually may have been when he talked to Stu saying that like, yeah, I may have gotten more elsewhere. I don't know, but I was comfortable here, you know? So there's always the possibility that that it did come from that kind of third party or something like that. So
do you have to get another phone
when you're going through all of this?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've thought about that before because that would be so annoying if you're just like, I don't know. I mean, I guess guys like the attention though, right?
I would lose all my text messages, like the stuff that's actually,
yeah,
that's actually important day to day. Like I would never get anything done.
It would be completely lost in a flurry of texts from coaches and NIL collectives or whatever.
FaceTimes with coaches and they're not wearing a shirt. And
yeah. Yeah, it would be a lot. I mean, it probably would help to have a second phone there for sure.
Did they let him take his jersey home with him? And how quickly did they put together a jersey? Because that's impressive as hell.
Well, I think a lot of players do the photo shoot in the school when they do their visit and everything. So they must have let him take one home with them. Whether or not that actually had his name on the back or was to go.
I fell for the, I'm a mark. I'm a mark. I believe it was
probably just a blood jersey or something.
I can't believe it.
It was number 21. I don't know if he would actually wear that number when he came to SLU though. But I did see people commenting that they liked the number and stuff like that. So I don't know, man. I'm just thrilled in the end that's how it worked out. And, you know, he wore 21 at Indiana State. So, I don't know, maybe they did get one ready for him quickly.
So I was watching that kind of on my phone, and there was a point in the announcement where I missed the part where he talked. He went from, you know, Indiana State, and then he said shirts, but I didn't hear him switch to shirts.
Mm.
And then he said, like, I gotta stay with it or something like that.
Right. Yes.
And for like a split second, I go, oh my God.
He's going back.
Oh my God. and then I realized it was a different shade of blue and I came to my senses.
Yeah. No, I know that it was the way it was worded. I could definitely see how you thought that. I mean, it was cool though. I mean, he said he talked to his family and they knew that staying with shirts was the right thing. Right. He said, there's a lot of trust there. They've got a great overall relationship. He said he knew he had to follow him and just wanted to be coached by him. And it seems pretty, just perfect. Awesome. That they have that good a relationship. They have that much trust that Schertz is basically like, I'm going to a new school, but the offense still runs through you, right? Like, this is not, we're not trying to come here and recruit over you. You're still the man, right? He was the key piece. And as much as I like all of the other Indiana State players in their starting five, and two of them we know are already going to Texas, and we'll get to the other two later in the show. But as much as I like all those guys, it does run through him. He's the key player. He is the Jokic in their offense. And this was the key. If you told me we were only going to get one of the Indiana State guys, he would have been the one. And it's huge though, Zach. But I mean, maybe even bigger is like, how big a star this kid is.
Yeah.
At this point. I mean, they're talking about wild. Like his Instagram follows and everything. It is wild. I mean, he's got genuine star power.
Yeah. This is a huge moment. And Mark Cuban follows him, I guess, which is crazy.
Yeah. He said that was his, they asked him about who his biggest follow was. And Mark Cuban's the one he named.
He said he embraces the nicknames. We learned that. I wondered about that. I also have another question. Whenever Robbie wants to come on the podcast, I have a question that nobody's asked. And I'd love to hear it, hear an answer to it. He embraces the nicknames. I think I gotta pick on the St. Louis media again. They had by far the worst. Of the idea of like coming up with nicknames.
Well, everybody is now scrambling to come up with St. Louis or SLU yes. specific ones because, Larry Blurred or Larry Nerd or some of the ones that were specific to Indiana State, they're now going to, throw those out and come up with the SLU specific ones. And why do you think the local media has kind of whiffed on it?
I mean, obviously, they tried really hard. They tried way too hard. Pete, do you have any of them that you saw?
Well, I was impressed by it took me a minute to figure out what you were trying to do here, but when you said Cian Vujicic, I thought that was pretty funny. It's very specific. I mean,
it is so specific.
You're basically just talking to our audience with that one.
Yes.
I don't know how far that one's going to go, but I did think that was great. Somebody said SLU Alcindor.
I thought that's
definitely one of the top ones for me. I haven't been able to come up with any on my own. I'm sure I'll probably think of one, I'll be cutting the grass in a few days. I'll think of one and then someone else will have thought of it already, I'm sure. But no, I guess I'm not creative enough.
Yeah. I liked, somebody said Wheezy Ed McCauley, which was pretty great.
Yeah.
That's another super specific one. I still like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Mm-hmm.
I just think like it's just gotta flow. You can't force it. And I think the who's it, Hockman, who called it Toasted Avioli, like, what are you doing? Like, that's
I thought it was okay.
That's one ball. I mean, I saw the thumbnail for this was going to be the Toasted RAV, and mm-hmm. I changed it and I went with SLU Alcindor. I thought that one, I changed that late into the editing process. I think it's fun. I don't know. The nicknames are whatever. I'm not a huge nickname guy.
Well, I think it just goes to show like his overall marketability, I'm looking at, I know Twitter's not what it used to be. He's got almost 5,000 followers there. He's got over 20,000 followers on Instagram. His Instagram profile picture is his own proprietary logo. It's like a 2 and a 1 kind of worked into the negative space on RA and his initials. It looks pretty cool. And there's no one else in the game who looks like him. Obviously, I think a lot of people, especially like the online, nerdier fans, have really, glommed onto this guy in the last year and really he's become popular that way. It's kind of like a word of mouth online sort of thing. And then people start watching him and watching Indiana State, and they were kind of like, oh my God, like this guy's really good. This team's really good. And for that to now be at SLU is so fun. It's so exciting. It's been a while since we've really had that, that fun, marketable player. And Zach, I honestly think he could be next season. He could be the most popular, marketable player in college basketball. Like he has that level of fame and notoriety and fandom around him. And I think, you know, like Zach Edey's been a sports media favorite within the game for a couple of years now. And then on the women's side, with all the big stars really going on to the WNBA this year, you know, there's a big, I mean, you still got Juju, you still got Paige Becker. So there's a couple really good women's players still around who are super marketable and popular and all that kind of stuff. But on the men's side, I think he really has a chance to be the guy who's probably like the fan favorite in the entire landscape of men's basketball. And I don't know that SLU's ever had anything like that.
No, I think Jordaire was the only, like Jordaire's the t-shirt that was made and then got cease and desisted. By the way, Jordaire, if you're listening, hit me up. I'll connect you with the guy who did it originally, and you guys should get together and make shirts. I think Jordaire was the last guy that was a marketable star. I think you had kind of Cody Ellis a little bit in that era, who was, I mean, he was marketable, but I mean, he wasn't really the star of that team. He just kind of was the charge guy with the blue hair. I'm trying to think those teams in the 90s. I guess Larry Hughes, but that was pre-social media.
Yeah, so it was a different era. It was pre-social media. I mean, that's also when everybody was coming from high school, right? Not really as transfers. Larry Hughes is the highest rated guy out of high school, I think probably the program's ever had. But Avila being one of the highest rated transfers in an era where the transfer portal is now the primary recruiting space, that's a big deal. So he truly is the biggest star. And set marketability for aside for a minute. Now I'm just talking like his actual rankings within the game. He's the biggest signing we've had since Hughes, I think, unquestionably. And now it's just the, you know, how are we able to build on that star power, that image?
One last note before I want to get to the opportunity there. But I do want to just circle back and tag one note from this interview. And that is that the first game is going to be on November 4th at the Sanford Pentagon in Sioux Falls. According to the Field of 68, quote, more info to come. It's been a long time since we've started a season somewhere other than our home court.
It has been a while. And what I couldn't figure out, I didn't find a good website from last year for the event, but is this a multi-round event, or is it just kind of a one-off series of games?
I have nothing on that.
Okay.
I know is that the last time that they played not at a neutral site was 2007, 2008, when they played at the Peterson Event Center in Pittsburgh at the Hispanic College Fund Challenge. The third game was against Pittsburgh.
Okay, yeah, I would not have had that one ready if that was a trivia question that landed in my lap. So nice work there. But the way that Schertz kind of hinted at the event when he was at Humphreys like a week and a half ago, he said it was like multiple Power 5 matchups, right? And then now people are saying on Billikens.com for some reason they think it's just a one-off with Santa Clara.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I haven't been able to confirm either way yet. But I do think that this is, you know, normally it's a pretty high profile event. I know there's some pretty good teams that have played there in the past. So it's a good thing to be part of regardless. And I think they're going to be able to put together a pretty good schedule. I'm not too worried about, if this game does wind up being Santa Clara and not like a higher level team, I'm not going to get too down about it. But anyway, yeah, I think it's pretty cool to already know that.
Yeah, we are getting so much information, a flood of information around this team, and it's certainly a welcome change. But back to the kind of how big of an opportunity it is for to have a guy like Robbie Avila on campus wearing the Billiken. I mean, this is he, dude, like. Beyond the fact that he is a great passer and he is the engine that makes this car go, he's going to be the engine. And people want to play with him. People want to get the passes from him. People want to be around a guy who gets the amount of attention that Robbie gets.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, he's the focal point of the offense, but the thing that's cool about him is it's not like a system where it's just like feed him, you know, and let him cook. It's like, no, he's a passer. Like the offense flows through him. He creates more opportunities for everybody else. That Indiana State starting lineup, every single player averaged double figures, and not all. And I'm not talking like 10 to 12. I mean, that was the low end. That would have been like the number five guy. Like Avila averaged over 17. And the other guys were like 16, 15, 14, you know, like they're all averaging like mid teens, not low teens. He creates through him and this system, a ton of scoring looks at the basket from the 3-point line. It's really a thing that makes everybody better. And so there's no question people want to play on this team with him. It's a no brainer, I think.
He said, NIL is a big deal. And you could possibly get more at a Power 5 school, Avila said. But there's more to it than NIL that me and others realize. Being able to check boxes outside of the money is what Shirts does for me. St. Louis is a big city, and I think I'll be able to use my player profile to get in the city and maybe make more than I could at another school. He's working with an eyewear or working with his agent for an eyewear sponsorship, which is a must. That they give away goggles this year.
Yeah, I think you and I had already said they've got to do something with like Clarkson Eye Care or one of those. Yes. Like that's, you know, been a sponsor in the past. And it's a no-brainer for both a promo and like a deal with him, right? Some kind of like advertising deal with him. What you know, we're going to have to keep brainstorming on other opportunities. Hopefully we can get him on the show and talk to yes. him about things that he's thinking about, things that they've reached out to him. And I know he can't probably get into specifics until things are signed, but you know, like there are going to be a lot of opportunities for somebody who's as visible as him. And that's not even, Zach, to get to what SLU's athletic department themselves can do, right? Like the billboard, they've been pretty good about billboards in and around the city in the past.
They love billboards.
Now you get to put him on the billboard. And people, even people who don't know who he is, he's such a unique looking player. Mm-hmm. You got to go figure out like, okay, what's going on at SLU this season? Who is this dude? I gotta see what, I at least got to check in on this thing, right? Like, even if you're completely out of the loop on college basketball. So I think like just being able to put him on your marketing materials is
huge.
Such a huge difference maker.
Massive. I mean, they're already trying to, you know, drum up season tickets, which is absolutely what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. And minutes after the commitment, they sent out an email with the official graphic with a link for season tickets. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, shit. That's better than announcing a concert.
They had that immediately, like within 5 minutes. I don't know if that 12-minute piece on the Field of 68 had ended by the time that was blasted out. It was in my inbox, and Stu's article was up and ready to go on STL Today. That was making the rounds on Twitter, being blasted out everywhere. They were absolutely ready for this. It was on their official page because, you know, he committed and signed simultaneously. He may have already signed, and maybe they were just waiting on him to do the public commitment before they did the full, you know, media blast. But it's they were ready to go. Like so far, very good. Like
yes,
phase one, the rollout has been excellent, and now move on to phase two to kind of keep and sustain and really build that interest heading into the season, yes. right? Like let's get those season ticket holders back who we've lost.
Me.
Let's get the casual fans. Yeah, you. Let's get the casual fans interested again. By the way, Zach, like that method of just like, you know, doing it piecemeal, one off for every game, you know, who's got an extra, or maybe I'll grab an extra for this one.
It's over.
It's going to be a lot harder to do, you know?
Yeah.
Because now people are going to be using their tickets more. Other people are going to be claiming extra seats more from their friends and stuff.
You're going to see the addition of Robbie Avila and that notoriety that comes with Josh Schertz is going to what the biggest difference I think Billiken fans are going to see this season. I want you to look out for it. Is the corporate seats in those first few rows, the seats that, you know, even during the good Ford years that weren't filled, they're going to be filled, and it's not going to be, it may be because we're doing well on the court, but I guarantee you the first few games, it's going to be to see Robbie Avila.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, stars in this game, stars mean so, so much, right? Like, think about the scene around the court in an NBA game. It's all about like getting up close to these guys, seeing them in person, being part of that scene. And I think we're going to have the closest thing we've ever had to that in Shea Fitz Arena, right?
Yes.
We're going to see those seats filled a lot more. We're going to see the suites filled a lot more. And I think you said it really well here when you say players will not only want to play with a passer and player like him on the floor, but like playing on his team increases their visibility and their yes. attention during national broadcasts and their NIL opportunities. So yes. now we have half the roster built, right? It's going to be easier to fill that back half when you have this known quantity, right? Like this is who the offense runs through. How do I fit into that? It's easier to make the pitch, sell guys on that, and go, we're going to have a lot of visibility in the next two seasons yeah. on this team.
I mean, if you told me, if somebody says, if they announce the national broadcast and someone says three of these games were added because of Robbie Avila, I'd say absolutely 100% believe that. You're going to get additional national broadcasts, and these guys like and share everything on social media. And I don't mean that they are letting you into everything about their life. I mean, every time your teammate posts something, you are retweeting it. You are reposting it. You want to go and play with a guy like Robbie Avila who has a major following on social media. And to that point, look at everybody's complaint about college basketball this year. When comparing it, and I hate that people do this, but comparing it to the women's game where there were stars, marketable stars in their the women's NCAA tournament, and there were the rap was that there were no stars on the men's side. I don't buy that, but there's a huge opportunity for Robbie to be that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do get a little bit annoyed with some of the recent sports narrative about like there are no stars in college basketball, like men's college basketball. You've heard it with MLB lately too, right? There are no stars in MLB. Like it's like, well, write about them more, make them still like, what do you want us to do? I mean, you're not, it means you're not you're not publicizing them the right way. Oh. And there's a lot more to it than just like, oh, I haven't heard of any of these guys, you know, like that's just a really simplistic, lazy, argument for one. I mean, I think yes. there are a lot of stars out there, but now you have somebody who's not just a really good player, but nobody else in college basketball looks like this dude, right? You know, as we saw in the Field of 68 interview, he's just got a really low-key, likable personality too. He's now in a major media market. He's got, you know, an exciting up-and-coming coach and hopefully an exciting up-and-coming team as well, right? Like there's a real potential on a lot of different levels here. And I really don't think it's hyperbole to say he's going to be one of the top few stars in the men's game this season, period.
Yeah, I'm super I am so excited for Robbie Avila to be a Billiken. And I think this is the tip of the iceberg as it pertains to recruiting. I think, like I said, people want to play with a guy like Robbie, and they want to be on the same team. So, I mean, we know, we kind of have an idea that we'll get another commitment here tomorrow, today, as you're listening to this. However, I mean, I would not be shocked if the floodgates open and we see 3 to 4, if the roster's not finished by middle of May.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to see some dominoes start falling for sure. It's for a lot of all the reasons we've just said, right. And we'll get to this soon, but like, you know, that's one of the reasons we got Jimerson to stay. So that's case in point of kind of how this is going to work from here on out. And Zach, by the way, going back to this kid's star power, people who have never texted me about SLU basketball have been texting me about SLU basketball in the last 2 days because of this, right? Like that, what a better barometer of fame, what better barometer of fame is there than people who otherwise would not be interested are interested?
What's there's a term for this, right? There's like an index. Is it? It's.
I'm sure there is. I don't know.
I gotta look this up. But so I had a similar experience to that, in that when I went to celebrate 420 yesterday to watch the city game at halftime, I explained to my friends, and they actually, for the first time in the history, enthusiastically responded to the idea of the Josh Church Robbie Avila video session, and we popped open some videos on YouTube, and I showed them all that stuff, and it is mind blowing under the influence, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, good stuff.
I cannot find this. Yeah, celebrity fame index. I have no idea.
All right, something along those lines.
Yeah.
In the meantime, let's introduce our next commitment. And we don't want this one to go overlooked at all.
We had another commitment.
We think this is a big deal too, Zach.
Yes.
Yes, we had another one. This one actually came in before Avila. This is Amari McCautry. We have talked about him the last couple of weeks because we knew he was going to visit and everything. 6'6 guard from St. Thomas More High School, Milwaukee. Great size, really nice looking prospect. He visited SLU on Wednesday and then signed on Saturday morning. We didn't hear about a commitment before the signing. It was all of a sudden, it was just like signed, you know, like the official SLU online presence was tweeting it out. They published an article on their official website, all of that kind of stuff, Instagram. And then on his Instagram page, his commitment, he had the hashtag, Zach, for Rick Majerus. And this is a guy who's what, 18 years old now?
Yeah.
Right. And here we are in the year 2024.
Year of our Lord.
He would have been what, 6'7" when Rick Majerus died? I mean, this is a kid. So he's from Milwaukee, right? So there's a connection right there. But like the fact that he puts in his just like little, he said almost nothing else in his commitment. It wasn't like a whole long thing for Rick Majerus. I mean, this is a kid after our hearts.
Yeah, I love this. And I want to know if that is, I want to know what the motive for that hashtag was. So, I mean, I could see, you know, Wisconsin kid, obviously, Schertz talked a lot about Rick Majerus, has talked about Rick Majerus in many interviews. And I wonder if that's kind of the sales pitch he's actually going for. I wonder if that's the, you know, look, like Rick Majerus brought a top 10 team here. We're going to do that again. We are going to finish that legacy.
Yeah. One of the greatest basketball minds ever to come out of Milwaukee. And,
if it was good enough for him, it was good enough, you know,
for that. I mean, we're making presumptions here about what the pitch was and everything, right? And I don't know about what McCautry's history. Again, another guy we got to have on the show so we can ask him what his history may have been, knowing that about Majerus and his legacy and things like that as a Milwaukee native. But I do think it's incredible that message, if that was part of it, resonated with him. You know, like I think about like these dudes are less than half my age now. I don't know how they tick, you know. I don't know what's gonna actually resonate.
Nor should you.
So for that to really click with them is so impressive to me. And like, I that's on a day that we got his commitment and with that hashtag and then the Avila thing. I mean, like, the vibes could not be better. But back to McCautry, Zach, I mean, we've talked about him a couple times now, like I said, but everyone listening to this, do yourselves a favor. Go watch some highlights of this kid on YouTube. Amari McCautry, it sounds.
I keep calling him Jericho Cotry. Like, that's like the NFL player. I don't know. That's the most random ass NFL player I can think of, but I keep wanting to call him Jericho McCautry.
That name is not, I don't even know that one. I just never
I couldn't tell you where he played. I think he played for the Steelers.
I have no idea. I remember a Jericho. Anyway, but this is a player. Like, if you go watch his highlights, I don't think he would have been available to us in any other era. And even now, we managed to lock him down right as some of the other power conference programs were starting to swirl around. We heard DePaul was interested. We heard he was about to visit Xavier after he visited us. So a couple Big East teams right there. And you know, Marquette, Wisconsin, some other big programs are right there in his backyard. Schertz's quotes about him was this. We have recruited Amari for the last year, meaning I think they started in, last fall when they were at Indiana State. And Schertz said, he's a young man with a limitless ceiling. His size, skill, and explosiveness are all at the very highest level. And on top of that, he's a fantastic teammate. We could not be more excited to have the opportunity to coach Amari and work together to maximize his potential. So, Zach, this is one of those guys, you know, incoming high school player. You never quite know who's ready to go. But I got to say, the size, you know, the physicality is there for a college guard. He's absolutely ready to go physically, I would say. I'm sure there's going to be some conditioning and things to work on, just making that jump and the adjustment to a much bigger workload in the college game. But still, everything that I see on video pops to me as someone who's ready to go right now, ready to be a contributor on this team. And he's just a really versatile, talented player. Very, very excited about his potential.
Do you think the Picar and McCautry signing signal a strategy of any sort with the way Schertz is recruiting?
Well, they can't all be transfers, right? Because the transfers, more than anyone else, are going to expect bigger minutes right away. And maybe not all of them. Maybe some of them will understand that they're playing a pretty specific role. But if you look at the way Schertz's team worked last year at Indiana State, it was pretty much about those top five. They did have other guys in the rotation, but everybody in his starting five played pretty huge minutes. And it was a big drop off when you got to number six on down from there. And so given that he's going to have a different lineup at SLU and that he's probably not going to have more than two of those top five, or it looks like it will be, just two. It remains to be seen whether his rotation will go a little bit deeper, you know, as he's got a lot of new players and they're adjusting to his style and everything. But I do think that when you're building an entire roster and only three guys are coming back who played last season, you know, that's 10 scholarships, and it's just not everybody's going to be an upperclassman coming in, right? I think you have to have a couple guys coming out of high school, some of who understand that they're more developmental players, some of who expect to get some minutes as a freshman. I think that's a reasonable way to go. And then to say, this is my system, you're going to need a couple years in it, and then you're really going to thrive. And if you can get those guys, retain those guys, I think that's a way to build. There is a way to build a sustainable program today that way.
You mentioned transfers in there, but anything you want to leave on McCautry or Avila before we move on?
I think that's it for now, Zach. I know we're going to be coming back to especially Avila quite a bit. Just given his stature, his star power. But I'm really excited about both of these guys. The more, you know, McCautry was more of an unknown, but the more I looked into him, the more excited I got. And then just it's only now starting to sink in that the Schertz Avila combo is just huge for SLU. It's huge.
I do want to leave, like, I want to talk about the merchandising, and I hope that Billiken Victory Fund, I hope SLU itself has been, you know, working on, first of all, the minute you knew you were getting Robbie Avila, you need to make sure that there will be a way to get customizable Nike jerseys in that shop. I don't care if they're sewn in or heat pressed, but they better look good. Like, they better look right. That's all I'm saying. And you got to get them in there because people are going to want a Robbie Avila jersey.
Yeah. And I've seen people asking about like some of the t-shirts and hats and other designs of stuff that was kind of floating around this past year. So SLU needs to be ready with a whole slate of Avila merch ready to go as the season gets closer. I'm not talking about like right now, but as this gets closer, they need to start rolling some of that stuff out because that's the revenue potential there is huge.
That was the one thing I always said should have been like the initial rollout of NIL, is like schools being able to sell merchandise with players' names and faces on it for, and then the NCAA designates a specific amount that players must receive. That's how it should be rolled out.
It's another one of those things that I think always should have existed, right? Like it's always dumb that we could buy jerseys, but it just had to be nameless or whatever. I mean, like I don't see any reason we always couldn't have bought a, you know, Larry Hughes jersey when he was here, and Hughes gets this percentage of every sale and this percentage goes to the other players on the team spread out. And then like this percentage goes to the school. And then, you know what I mean? Like there has to be a way to, again, if we ran the NCAA decades ago, things would have been a lot different, a lot fairer, and wouldn't be so out of control and ridiculous right now, with some pretty basic ideas. But I don't know why you couldn't have been doing that all along.
Let's go over to the transfers. I think Matt Lorland, let's talk about Isaiah Swope, Pete. That's the guy. That's the guy that everybody is going to be asking about now. He's the next domino to fall. And honestly, I think we decided that he was going to commit to SLU when I guess his mom followed us on Twitter. But and just as I send that to you guys, to you all, we get the info that Matt Norlander just straight up says that he's coming to SLU.
He said that, yeah. And all we had known before is that he's going to announce his decision on Monday, which is today, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to it brand new. It's also his birthday. And there's a pretty good chance by the time you're actually listening to this, it already happened, right?
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Isaiah. Welcome to SLU, I hope. Yes. And
God, that could be so bad.
It could be. I'm willing to step on that rake, though, Zach. Okay. You know, give me all the hate I deserve if this blows up in my face.
Call you Wile E. Coyote.
Every single sign so far is that he's coming to SLU. And we just didn't want to put it with the other two in the official commitments until he actually makes it official. So we can say more about him, his process, his game, all of those stuff. Suffice it to say, he's, you know, a guard. We really like him a lot. He was excellent at Indiana State last year. And we would be thrilled to have him in Billiken blue instead of Sycamore blue now.
Absolutely. Josiah Dotsler, this is one that, like, I feel like he visited and then fell off the face of the earth. Did he go on vacation? Did he just go to Mexico? Or
I've been doing kind of daily sweeps, right, of all the guys that we know who have visited in the past week, and he's one of them. And he's just been quiet since then. And I've looked up his name and like, well, okay, if he's not saying anything, are other schools or other fan bases saying anything about him? But no, it's been quiet since his visit about a week ago. And so, you know, he's the freshman guard from Creighton who visited last weekend, and just, yeah, no details yet on him. But as soon as
I want this kid, like we said last weekend, Creighton fans really liked him. apparently that family is extremely popular in Omaha. So I really want him. Speaking of a player that I think a lot of us want, Cam Manyawu.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the one from the Kansas City area, freshman, power forward from Wyoming. He visited on Monday the 15th before heading to Drake on Wednesday the 17th. And just as a reminder, he committed to Indiana State out of high school, but then decommitted when assistant coach Bryston Williams, who was the head recruiter for him, took a job out at Wyoming. So he followed Williams out there, and now Williams took an assistant coaching spot at Drake under new head coach Ben McCollum. And so SLU and Drake are pretty natural ones to visit, right? Like, here's the head coach I had committed to. Here's the assistant that so far I've followed. Now, a lot of people tend to think that given that he's already followed that assistant coach once, they've got a special relationship and he's going to follow him again. I don't know. I mean, either way, SLU, Indiana State, it would be pretty interesting to be working for the two most highly respected, sought-after coaches from Division II of the past decade. In McCollum and Josh Schertz. So that's pretty interesting when you look at it that way, but it's just kind of how it worked out.
Pete, there was a local kid that left that has a chance to turn us down for the third time in his college career.
That would be Connor Turnbull, the sophomore forward from Butler.
And I did also steal that from Billikens.com. So I'm sorry for whoever I stole that joke from.
He visited this week. We think it was maybe on Tuesday, give or take a day. Did get confirmation from Stu Durando that he visited, though. Honestly, thought we'd hear something more on him by now, but we haven't. Thought we had the inside track here. And he's another one. Like Dotsler, we really haven't seen any other programs connected to his name yet. So he keeps a pretty low profile on social media. He's a little bit harder to read. So we'll just kind of keep an eye on it there. But he's another player we really think would be a good fit here.
Yeah, I mean, look, a local kid. Of course, I like the idea. Grant Newell, who I keep calling Cam. There's so many of these dudes that, like, in my daily conversation, I just mix them up constantly, and I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or if there's just so many players.
He's kind of the easiest one to get mixed up to, right? Because, like, he's the one we're probably the least familiar with. He's a sophomore forward from Cal. He visited this week, we're pretty sure on Friday, and then he has two more visits lined up after SLU. He went to Utah State a few days before SLU, I think Tuesday or Wednesday. So, we don't know him as well. He's from Chicago area, went out to the West Coast. He's just the one that kind of gets lost in the shuffle, I think, if you're going through all these names. So I understand. And he also doesn't have a name that's, like, super unique, right? Like Manyawu or something like that. I mean, those other ones stand out a little bit more. So yeah, I don't know yet what he's going to be doing, but I do think he's going to take some other visits before we hear a decision.
Let's see. I guess we can take Jalen Deloach off the board. You rightly were skeptical whether he would make it to campus on our last episode. He's a junior from Florida, previously a VCU, was supposed to visit SLU on the 28th and 29th, but committed to Loyola on the 16th. Oh, well, they are building quite the front court over there in Chicago.
Yeah, they've had quite a year in the portal.
The Indiana State players, Ryan Conwell, we have an update on him, and spoiler alert, he's not coming to SLU.
Yeah, he's the one from the starting five who was still kind of an open question, right? Like, we had the two go to Texas. We have the two, we think, coming to SLU, and then he was the fifth. And before we got either commitment for the SLU guys, Swope and Avila, Swope, we think. But he's, before that happened, he visited Xavier and then committed there on Friday. He was there earlier in the week. He canceled his visit to Ohio State. There were some other schools interested. He was supposed to visit, I think, Vanderbilt, and a lot of other high level programs interested. So Xavier came in and won him over, and that's where he's going. And that's a tough one for me to swallow with a Xavier fan in my household.
Let's talk about Aaron Gray. There seems to be like this weird, like it's so interesting to see the connection of all of these Indiana State players. The transfers are getting, you know, I don't know. The whole thing's weird. It's like the transfer portal and connecting all of where these players are going, where they've been, is really like Charlie Day in It's Always Sunny with the corkboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
It's hard to follow. Aaron Gray, though, he's the cousin of new assistant Anton Gray. Was there any indication that he might follow?
No, we really didn't get anything. He was able to go to Indiana State from Niagara previously. He's not a big time player, right? Like he's a little bit lower in the rotation. So he's one of those guys that I think, like, if we had a 13th scholarship still laying around late in the cycle, maybe you take him as a guy, a cultural fit, a guy who's in the family, that kind of thing. I think he's only got one more season to play anyway. But I think he's going to stick at Indiana State. He had followed his cousin previously. So no, he's not going to be coming here, but in terms of like what that does to our rotation, it doesn't really do anything. He wasn't one of the starters or anything there.
The three high school players that were signed to play at Indiana State. This is super interesting because you forget that they still have to be let out of their scholarship or NLI.
Yeah, released.
Because technically that NLI is signed with Indiana State.
That's right. Yeah, it's so, not with the coach.
So one of the more surprising news pieces of news we got is Christian Nitu, who we didn't know what the hell was going on, and he swiftly committed to Florida State.
He did, and he's had an interesting arc because when he was like a younger high school player, like a sophomore, between sophomore and junior year, around that time, he was getting those power conference offers. Like he was a power five recruit out of Canada, you know, 6'11", tall, skinny kid, really getting those looks. And then he kind of tailed off. He was dealing with some injuries, and he went down a level in terms of his recruiting profile. And you started seeing, you know, the Indiana States, your MAC, Horizon, Valley kind of programs offering, right? He was going more to that level. And so he winds up going to Indiana State. And then, you know, spring recruiting being what it is, the cycle moving fast, I think once the Indiana State coaching change happened, he kind of steps back, takes a wider view, gets his name back out there, and realizes there might be a market for him. So, you know, pretty savvy move on his part to kind of take this coaching change at Indiana State and parlay that into a move to a, you know, major ACC program.
I want to talk about the name that is my favorite of these guys, and that's Merritt Alderink. I don't know why I like that name. It's a fun name, though.
It is a fun name. And look, his recent social media activity, it doesn't really tell us what's going to happen, but it's interesting because there have been some SLU related follows recently. Also some others that make it less clear, right? Like he started following, I think his most recent follow is Ryan Conwell on both Instagram and Twitter. And I know it's crazy that I'm looking at this, but I'm trying to see what these guys might actually be doing. And he has also followed some SLU assistants and players as well. So don't know what's going on there yet, but we're keeping an eye on what these guys are doing.
Robert Sean Birmingham, I got nothing.
Same. Yeah, no idea. Really, really low-key guy in terms of his online presence. So I have no idea. Nobody's written anything. His name hasn't really been mentioned on social media. Zero clue what he's going to do. But he's the third of that incoming Indiana State class.
We've kind of become this show is almost going to need to become the audio version of like a Dan Cesar article because we're reporting on the media.
We're the ombudsman.
Yes. I don't know what that means, but I assume it's the old guys in the Muppets.
I think it was last week that you admitted to not reading, or was that?
I don't read. No, I'm definitely illiterate.
Okay. Well, you can look that word up. Okay. But yeah, you're right.
Zach. Is that like four person in a jury? Because I just watched 12 Angry Men again the other night.
No, I mean, I'm impressed that you watched that movie,
It's
actually.
a great
But
movie.
no, that's not what it is. But what is impressive, Zach, is we are getting a lot more media attention than we normally do this time of year. And I thought I highlighted two pieces here in the notes because I thought these were both really good. Stu's article on Schertz's decision process and hiding out in Terre Haute, coming in the back door of Jay Ford's Black Angus, which was like one of his go-to restaurants there. And that was a restaurant that also had a burger named after him. I thought this piece overall, though, was really interesting about his process. And I'm wondering kind of like what our impressions are versus what the article said.
As in kind of the way we assumed everything went down.
Yeah, versus what was laid out in here.
Yeah, I don't know. I think obviously everything in here probably happened. I would take issue with maybe some of the dates and times. I think this stuff was probably going on well before New Year's. Maybe New
Okay.
Year's, maybe New Year's. At the latest, or at the earliest.
So according to the article, Schertz received five texts about different jobs in the hour before Indiana State's second round NIT game against Minnesota. And then I guess I assume one of those was SLU, but he talked to Chris May multiple times a day once the process with SLU was kind of moving. He also talked to Fred Pistello, Richard Chaffetz, and others. And then Janet Oberle was regularly talking to his wife, Natalia. He said these weeks of conversations were convincing and that he decided to go with SLU, which kind of lines up with what he had told Frank Cusumano, that he made up his mind after the Utah game. It wasn't entirely clear in this article how close he was to some of the other jobs we heard about. The piece only said that he was, quote, said to be close to a deal to coach Louisville and his alma mater at FAU came calling. But really, I just my overall question is, do we believe the timeline, or is he just kind of like retconning it a little bit to make sense for everybody?
I think it's a lot of things, right? I think I again I don't even know if it's said to be close to a deal to Coach Louisville. I don't even know if that's true. Like, again, it's
Yeah.
just said to be.
Yeah, he was said to be, but a lot of
Yeah.
people are said to be a lot of things.
I can say a lot of things. People know that. Most of them are
Zach
not true.
Zach Miller was said to be close to the head coaching position at Louisville.
Zach
Not
Miller is said to be in talks to become the new athletic director at St. Louis University.
a lot of people said it, but someone did.
I really want to know how this starts. How does this process start? This is probably the one spot where I'd be like, yeah, I don't really know what to do here. Because once you get the introduction, I know what to do. How do you start that dialogue if you're a Chris May, a Richard Chaffetz?
Yeah, so we got to assume at least five schools reached out to him. It was probably a lot more than that, to be
Is
honest.
are
I
we
mean,
doing the is this the rule of three?
oh, like
Yeah, like body count, rule of three.
what's the body count rule of
Like
three?
if a guy says he's been with three women, it's one. Yeah, this is like
God.
I mean, this whole thing is
Yes.
dating.
Okay,
This
yeah,
whole
I see.
process is dating.
I've been out of the game for 19 years, so I you would know. You just said you have more recent experience with this than I do. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, this whole like it's quite obvious that recruiting and coaching searches are very similar to romantic courtships.
And kind of along those same lines, what I'm wondering is, how do you whittle all of those initial interests, those initial contacts down to like, these are the ones I'm going to focus on, right? Because it's clear that SLU was pretty quickly one of the ones that was like, all right, we're going to start dating pretty seriously. And
Yeah.
the other ones, I'm wondering like what they said versus what SLU said to get them kind of the brush off, as opposed to, okay, tell me more, you know,
Yeah.
let's pursue this a little more. That's kind of what interests me the most. I think once the process is going on, I kind of could have said like, yeah, these are the key figures. You know, I'm sure these are the different pitches they gave him, but I really do. I'm wondering like, what were those initial screens for the other ones like, for him to go, I don't think I want to live there, or You guys, that's not going to be enough money or whatever the early.
It was, you get to throw the first pitch at a Cardinal game. That was the real worm on the end.
Yeah. I guess that was more attractive than throwing the first pitch at a Louisville Bats game.
Yes. Yes, it was. you know what? There was an article this week that really, I had to have it read to me via the very helpful feature on STL Today, mm-hmm. where it can read the article to you. I love that because, again, can't read. The Gibson Jimerson article by Stu Durando in the Post-Dispatch. By the way, have we all agreed that Stu Durando is Josh Schertz's go-to?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, he's been breaking things, you know, like breaking information, which is not something that he had really done much of at all, you know, like under Ford, and not his fault. You know, it's like that athletic department, that program, were just not giving him information. But yeah, I have to think that he's just a straight up contact of this staff.
But Stu did a feature on Gibson Jimerson. He put his name in the portal and woke up. By the way, why is it that always when like somebody does something like this, they're like, oh, I hit send, didn't think anything of it, and took a nap? Like, I'm pacing around my apartment if this is the case.
Every time you tweet, you're like,
yes,
send, and then you, yeah, and then you're like, I go refresh, take a,
yes,
refresh.
No,
refresh.
I go take a nap. I tweet, I put out a banger of a tweet, and then I take a nap.
Yeah, no, and no, you sit there refreshing, pacing.
Hell yeah, I do.
Turning your notifications on.
I hate these transfer ones where they put in all the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's obvious. Like, all of these accounts should be, like, that new X engagement farming thing. Mm-hmm. Like, all of these accounts should be disbarred.
That's literally
what they're doing.
That's a whole other topic. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's a really... But,
you get so many notifications
between what is pure engagement farming and what isn't. I mean, that's going to be a mess.
I'm just going to start taking recruits lists and just adding a million schools, like the schools that tweet about it the most, most. That's just what you like. Why not? It'd be easy. But to get back to the article, Gibson Jimerson said he put his name in the portal and woke up to 20 messages from school or messages from 20 schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it was up to 40 long after that. And he said about 90% of them were coming from power conference programs.
Imagine like Mississippi Valley State. Hey, Gibson.
Yeah.
Would you be interested in coming to play for us?
And he's like, you're already in my bottom 10%. Sorry.
He graduates with his MBA this year, so next year he'll get a certificate in organizational leadership. Let's see. He's getting a bump from the Billiken Victory Fund, but I guess we'll never know what, like, as he said, we'll never know what he might have been able to receive elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't out there long enough to really get sort of concrete offers. Maybe he had some indication of numbers, but like the article said, one of the interested schools was UConn, right? So they were still playing for most of that time, and he wasn't actually able to get a visit or anything set up with them. So that will always be like a story he can tell, but he won't actually know what the offer would have looked like, or what the visit would have been like, or any of that. It just didn't last long enough. But I guess it was like that with most schools, really. He said, quote, for me, NIL money was a factor, but not the factor. I could have gone to another school and said, this is what I'm looking for. But I wanted to be back here. I really did. I'd rather be somewhere I'm not making as much money, but I'm happy. Where some guys don't care. I'm comfortable here. I have a support system here. And the legacy part is important to me. Zach, the thing that was kind of interesting to me with this is, that's now the second time in this show, second time this week, we've heard a SLU player say, I may have been able to get more elsewhere, but this is where I wanted to be. And in Jimerson's case, he's a 6-year player coming back to where he's played his whole career. In Avila's case, He's coming to play for the coach that he trusts to maximize his potential. So it's pretty interesting that we're, you know, we think that we're in a pretty good spot in NIL, but clearly we're still not in the same level of like power conference programs. And that's already being acknowledged publicly, right?
Yeah, I don't think anybody is matching up with these power five numbers. I mean, what you've got Jerry Jones saying that he'll pay for the whatever recruits that Calipari had mm-hmm. already signed to go to Kentucky to come over to Arkansas. I mean, there's stories about Texas. Obviously, you've got Kent and Larry going to Texas. I mean, they're apparently throwing around big numbers because, I mean, they have to. You're in desperation mode. Say, like, you got to win now mode or else Rodney Terry's going to get the boot. Right. So, I mean, look, like, what is it? Mizzou? Apparently with that Duke center, the story was that I saw a message board rumor that it was like the guy went to Mizzou, got a number, went back to Duke, was like, this is what Mizzou's giving me. And they're just like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's happening a lot,
which I think is absolutely the thing that you need, that we want to see out of a coach, right? Mm-hmm. If a guy wants to go get paid X amount of dollars and he's not indispensable, fine.
Yeah. Best of
like
luck.
We need intelligent, smart money decisions when it comes to NIL, or else we're just going to be another one of those schools that is throwing money at a problem that can never be fixed.
Yeah, that's right. And fit is still crucial. Fit is still important. Schertz has said all along that he's very deliberate with the way he constructs a roster. It's not just a matter of having whatever he wants to spend on whatever players are good. It's like the guys, they have to be the right fit. They have to understand roles. They have to understand the timeline on their development, all of those things. And if they're not interested, that's fine. We're going to find somebody else who is. And I think that's still the right way to go about this.
And I think it's super important for a school like SLU to bring that guy, that kind of coach in. And I think that's why this was such an important hire and such a specific hire that it could only be maybe three guys.
Yeah.
Because again, we're dealing with a smaller budget. Yes. I think we've talked with our SLU Twitter think tank friends, and where you talk about, I don't even know if I want to kind of make this generalization, but, or kind of the idea that the NIL, the major, the can't miss guys that we need are going to come from one source, and the, your everyday players are going to come from a different source. When you need to get a guy, that's when you pull out the checkbook, not necessarily go to the Billiken Victory Fund, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I think all of that is correct. Swinging back to Jimerson.
Yeah, we do. My fault.
No, not at all. I mean, that's how it works, man. He will turn 25 this next season. And he says,
get a job, old man.
Well, he says he plans to treat this as a professional year with a lighter academic load.
Just like my last year at SLU.
Yeah, same here. Same here. Now, relatively speaking, I was still doing more than an organizational leadership certificate, but I still didn't have my first degree the way he's going to have.
I was taking Russian. That's it.
So with that lighter academic load, it's more time to work on his game. So he is at least transitioning to that professional mindset really this year. He said he watched all of Indiana State's NIT games because, quote, you could kind of see which way the search was going. I loved that. Like he was really wired in and paying attention.
What if was Gibson in the room for this hire?
I mean, he was in the room for the press conference, and that's more than other players can say, right?
He's like just, LeBron. He's selecting the next coach.
But I mean, he's a really cerebral guy, I think. And like the way that once he kind of, you know, number one, he's wired into the coaching change, right? He's really paying attention to what they're doing. And number two, he's kind of doing his homework. Like, he watches all of their games. He went to Schertz's press conference. So by the time that he actually sits down and talks to Schertz, it's not a completely fresh introduction, right? Like he kind of knows who this guy is and what he does. So I think that that's the work that Gibson puts into this process was meaningful in the end. He said that Schertz did not contact him when went in the portal.
It's just like dating, my dude.
He said they wanted to do it the right way. And but he said he also had to go into the portal originally because he had to prepare himself for the possibility that whoever the new coach was wouldn't be a fit. So I thought that was all pretty interesting. And you're right, not all that different than dating, I suppose. Jimerson said he heard from numerous teams in the A-10, including from his hometown of Richmond. But he said he never would have considered going to another school in the league, which I love. I love the idea of Richmond and VCU reaching out to him, like, please come home, spend your sixth year with us. And him just saying, no, thanks.
I am home.
Yeah, that's right. I am home. He took some time off after the season to recover because it was an absolutely draining experience. But he's back in individual workouts now. He's back in the weight room. And, you know, there are things he wants to accomplish next season. He said things that probably would have been more likely with a program like UConn, but he's moved past that. He plans to stay in St. Louis through the summer, continue his workouts. And the money quote for me, Zach, was, in a system that's even better for me, I could go from this type of player to really taking off. So he's got big, big plans for this season. And reading this article, I went from kind of, you know, ambivalent to mixed about how I felt about the fact that if he stays healthy, he's going to break our all-time scoring record. And now I'm just like, go get it.
Just shatter it. Make it never achievable.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever going to touch it.
Blow it out of the water, and let's do it in a season where we play close to 40 games or something. Like let's make this a special season. Just go for it, man.
Yeah.
So I'm all in on Jimerson and how he fits next season.
So much goddamn Billiken basketball. It's amazing, dude.
Yeah.
Feels good. Like, I'm slowly getting closer to that fever pitch of coming onto the show every week and being excited to talk about Billiken basketball.
And it's amazing, Zach, because here we are this deep into the show and we haven't even gotten to a pretty big piece of coaching news.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've already made my opinion on whether I think it's a big piece of coaching news. I think it's important. It's interesting. It's necessary. Mm-hmm. But Corey Tate is being retained as the final off-campus recruiting assistant coaching position. Pete, I'll let you give thoughts because I've kind of been vocal about it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm of the mindset, like, I basically trust the new head coach on this one and what he wants to do, right? Because he had pretty quickly built out the rest of his staff, both recruiting and non-recruiting assistants. And most of them, all but one, were guys that he had worked with in the past, either at Indiana State or elsewhere, and guys he's really comfortable with, has a good relationship with. And there was the one off-campus recruiting assistant role left to fill. And a lot of people did speculate, you know, because Tate's been hanging around. He was at Humphreys. He was at the press conference. People have seen him around. Is it going to be Tate? Is it not? Sometimes coaches take a guy for just one season in a transition. I saw it with Romard Soderberg. He kept a couple guys on, some longer. And then Majerus kept on Angris Thorpe after Soderberg left.
Number 18.
Yep. So, Thorpe's the guy who was there when I was. So it's not uncommon to leave a guy around. Now, Tate is a unique one because he's always been kind of, you know, the mayor of St. Louis, right? He's the guy who knows everybody, who the players around St. Louis, their families, everybody loves Tate. He's just that guy.
The mayor of St. Louis.
Yeah, he really is. So I think that's a valuable guy to have. Now, if Schertz said, no thanks, I'm moving on, I just kind of want to get rid of whatever was around in the previous administration and wipe the slate clean, I would have been fine with that, because as much as Tate is really well liked around the area, we've been hearing that local recruiting relationships have kind of tailed off. The communication had been pretty weak this past year. And that's not just Ford, but it was the whole staff. They just weren't hearing, kids just weren't hearing from these guys. So that had me a little bit worried that everybody was kind of just mailing it in and ready to move on. But look, if Tate can be, whether he's a 1 year transition guy or whether he's a guy who's going to be left on the staff for a longer period, I'm fine with it. And if he can kind of be reinvigorated, I don't think there's anybody out there who's super insulted by it. Right. I don't think they're blaming Tate. I think they're probably looking at Ford or SLU specifically, but not Tate. So I think those relationships, to the extent that they've been neglected, can certainly be repaired.
I totally agree. I just, again, I've said it. I don't, it doesn't change anything. I'm fine if he wants to, if they want to keep him. Again, I trust Josh Schertz. It's why we supported the decision to hire Josh Schertz and to hire to look at him. A new player director of player development. This was reported by our good friends over at West Pine Bills.
Yeah, although I want to hold off on him, because I don't think it hasn't been made official. We mentioned it previously. Are you seeing the strike through, by the way, in the notes to give people a peek behind the curtain?
I'm not.
Hit refresh on your browser. I struck a couple things out.
Oh, son of a bitch.
When we took a little break here earlier.
Alrighty, my fault.
Okay, so that one, we talked about it previously, and we'll circle back to it if they make it official, but I don't know if they have yet.
The existing Billiken players, obviously, we signed Max Pekar. We talked about that at great length last week. You can go back and listen to that. It's awesome. He signed on April 17th, the first day of the spring signing period. He committed last weekend during his visit. We have no clue on Jaquavis Williford. We assume he will not be a member of the Billikens because we've heard nothing.
I've heard that argued both ways. I've heard a lot of people say we haven't seen him released from his letter, so like he's staying, right? Like they're just assuming that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like nothing's been written about him. He hasn't said anything online. I have no idea what's going on there. I really don't. All along we've said it's been interesting because he was offered by Indiana State when Schertz was there. So this is a guy he's familiar with.
Right.
We just don't know.
He is a mystery. The transfer portal, Sion Medley is headed to Kent State, done on Monday, the 15th. Mm-hmm. Stefan Bussell going to Charleston alongside George Churchich. He committed on 420. Nice. Ezewiero Magasa, Zhang Parker, no idea yet on where they're headed. The walk-ons, Pete, we've got 3 of 4.
Yeah, we think we know rumored. We know that Alex Noakes entered the portal on Wednesday the 17th, and that was after Lamont Evans entered on Monday the 15th. And if you're wondering why they have to, if they're just walk-ons, I mean, they're still in the NCAA's purview, and even if they aren't scholarship players, they have to submit the paperwork to officially transfer to another roster, and they could become scholarship players elsewhere, if not at D1, then at another level as well. So we know about those two in the portal. Phil Jones, we have heard a rumor that he may be returning, but nothing official there yet. And then we don't know about Sotorov, the fourth one.
Saw a video and we liked him.
We do. As a
cultural fit, yeah.
On a Schertz team, you kind of look at a tall shooter like that and go, okay, like this is the kind of guy you would want to hang on to as a walk-on there for sure. So if he and Jones hang around, that makes sense to me.
You know what just makes sense, Pete? getting two men in a garden every week when you're heading to the grocery store.
Yeah, and in my case, not every week when you head to the grocery store, but every once in a while online, get a box of stuff shipped to your porch. And that's what I did recently, Zach. And I got to say, I went through the first jar of medium. Great, as always, but I love the feeling of finishing one and switching over to the next, because I tend to do a little bit of variety. And I like that that balance with the hot, right? Like I like going from the medium to hot, and every flavor of theirs is fantastic. It's always fresh. Love the texture. It's good stuff. And you know, I'm the biggest kind of salsa head in my house, but
you gotta be
time for me. Medium hot, it doesn't matter. Head over to twomeninagarden.com.
Still waiting on that that collaborative flavor. The Midtown Madison 2 Men in a Garden. None of this, yeah. Johnny come lately. Robbie Avila sponsorship with 2 Men in a Garden. We're first.
Yeah, we're the OGs, and yes. And yeah, Zach has definitely been pestering them a little bit more lately. So
I just want to, like, that would fulfill a life goal of mine.
Yes.
To have my own food stuff.
Yeah.
Or have my name on food stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's go. We've been at this so long. Baseball, Pete. Let's run through these games. Not a great weekend up in the Bronx for the Billikens. They dropped 2 of 3 up there. Close games, but not what you want to see going up against one of the lower, teams in the standings.
No, it's a road series, and you just want to take 2 out of 3, but unfortunately that swung the wrong way. We were off to a good start on Friday the 19th. Everyone in the starting lineup got at least one hit, and Cole Smith led the team with 3 in a 6-1 win up at Fordham. Easton Richter had 2 RBIs from a double in the second and a sac fly in the sixth. Drew Winters scored twice. Patrick Closey had the game's only home run, a solo shot in the fifth. And then Jackson Holmes spread out 9 hits over 5 innings, allowing just 1 run and getting the win. His record now, by the way, is up to 7-1. Ethan Bell pitched 4 shutout innings for the save. And then Zach, Saturday and Sunday, unfortunately, did not go our way.
No, an 8-4 loss at Fordham on Saturday, 4:20. Slew got out to a 2-0 lead, but gave up 3 runs in the third and 3-run homer in the sixth, with Fordham going on to score 8 total runs. Billikens only managed 6 hits, and the middle of the lineup really struggled in this one. Easton Richter led Slew with 2 hits in the leadoff spot. Charlie Weber got the start and the loss, unfortunately, in this one. A close game, 5-4 loss at Fordham on Sunday the 21st. The Rams got out to a 3-0 lead over the Bills, who got one back in the fourth on a Drew Winter solo shot. Then the Bills went up 4-3 after a 3-run homer from Graham Mastros. Unfortunately, Fordham Rams walked it off with a 2-run home run in the bottom of the ninth. Jack Weber started, but only got 2 2/3 innings. Josh Cunningham went the next 5 2/3, giving up just 1 run. Evan Gray came on in the ninth and unfortunately takes the L. The record now 26-10, first place in the A-10 by half a game, with a record of 8-4. Next up, they'll be at Lindenwood on the 23rd and a 3-game series at George Washington this upcoming weekend. Pete, the softballers, what were they up to this weekend?
They had a busy week. They had 5 games, and the first set of games was a doubleheader at Loyola on Wednesday the 17th. And it was pretty funny. They flipped scores, basically. The first game, they lost 6-3. The second game, they won 6-3. In the first one, they led 2-1 going into the fifth, and then Loyola scored 5 in the bottom of the inning. Slew could only get 1 more run back with an RBI double from Jocelyn Abbott in the seventh. Abiolsa's had an RBI triple in the third, which was followed by an RBI single from Natalie Sullivan, but Slew only had 4 hits in the whole game. Taylor Hockman went 4 2/3 and took the loss, with Isabel Royal coming in to finish the game. But in the win later that day, the game was scoreless going into the fifth. Slew scored 2 in that inning, along with 2 in the sixth and 2 in the seventh, with Loyola putting up 3 runs in the bottom of the sixth. Natalie Sullivan had a two-run triple in the fifth. Abby Mallow hit a two-run homer in the sixth. And Jane Kaneski had a two-run double in the seventh. Abby Ilses finished 3-for-3 with two runs. Isabel Royal went the distance, giving up 3 earned runs on 6 hits, 5 walks, and striking out 4. And then, Zach, they headed to George Mason for a weekend series.
Yeah, a 5-4 loss at George Mason in Game 1 on Saturday the 20th. The Billikens and George Mason traded solo shots in the second, with Slews coming off the bat of Kelsey Etling. George Mason then scored 3 unearned runs in the fourth to take a 4-1 lead after a few errors by the Billikens, who had 4 in this one. The Billikens tied it over the next 2 innings, but Mason walked it off with a 1-out, bases-loaded RBI single in the bottom of the seventh. Taylor Hockman only gave up 1 earned run in 6 innings and struck out 5. Isabel Royal pitched the seventh, got the loss. The next was a 4-1 win at George Mason. Game 2, Saturday the 20th, Royal started and pitched a complete game for the win, striking out 4. She didn't give up a run until the bottom of the seventh, when she had runners on second and third with one out after a wild pitch, so it could have been worse. Jane Kaneski led Slew with 3 hits. Natalie Sullivan had 2 RBIs, and Abby Ilses had 2 runs. Pete, talk about the rubber match there on the 21st.
Yeah, so unfortunately, Slew dropped this one 3-2. It was tied at 2 after 3, and the score held all the way to the bottom of the seventh when George Mason walked it off. They had a leadoff double, advanced her over to third with a sacrifice bunt, and then a couple batters later, they got her home with a single. Slew's runs both came on an RBI single from Jane Kaneski in the third, and Isabel Royal pitched a complete game and took the loss. The record is up to 25-17, which is third place in the A-10. They've got a conference record of 13-7. Dayton is first at 13-5, and Fordham is second at 13-6. So they haven't played the same number of games yet, but could be a close one down the stretch here. Next up, they're at SIUE on Wednesday the 24th, and then they've got a weekend series at Fordham, starting with a doubleheader on Friday.
Man, A-10 softball is really just a bunch of decent teams beating the tar out of each other.
That's exactly right.
It is. Like, you've got, like, Dayton, Fordham, SLU. Like, then you talk about, I mean, Loyola's pretty decent. Mason's decent. They're
how many of their conference games already have come down to a walk-off? I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
This week. Yeah.
It's bizarre.
They've won that way. They've lost that way. It's a very fine line.
Tennis finished up their regular season with a 6-1 win versus Lindenwood on Wednesday the 17th at Shaw Park. Senior day for Ryota Fukushima, Adam Bahun, Theo Ortiz, and Jonathan Sadowski. Congratulations. You'll never have to hear me butcher your name ever again. Slew won all 3 doubles matches, 5 of the 6 singles matches, with Ortiz, Luca Leonardo, Andres Castellanos, and Valentin Vasquez winning in both singles and doubles. They finished the regular season 14-3. Next up, they'll be at the Atlantic 10 Championships on the 25th through the 28th. On the women's side, they finished the regular season 14-3. Next up, they will also be at the A-10 Championships in Orlando between the 24th and the 27th. Track and field, Pete.
Yeah, they had the Billiken alumni meet this weekend, Friday the 19th and Saturday the 20th on the South Campus by the medical school. It was the senior meet and the annual alumni reunion. 17 seniors were honored. There were 10 personal bests on the men's side and 29 for the women. The men's 4x400 meter relay of Carson Amstutz, Will Stewart, Aiden Martin, and Danny Hopkins posted a season best time of 3:19.22. Which is a top 5 finish in the A-10 so far this season. Evan Brenderman lowered his top mark in the season on the triple jump, reaching 49 feet, 3 inches, good for a top 3 distance in the league this year. On the women's side, Journey Admonson improved her seasonal best in the triple jump with a mark of 41 feet, 1/4 of an inch, a close second in the A-10 this season. And then Samantha Kunzo won the hammer throw at the SLU meet with a distance of 209 feet, 2 inches, her second best throw of the season. She also competed down in Arkansas at the John McDonald Invitational and won the hammer there as well with 199 feet 9 inches. Next up for the track team, they're going to head up to Iowa. They're going to be in the Drake Relays on April 24th to 27th in Des Moines, and the Kip Janvrin Open on the 25th to 26th at Simpson College in Indianola. If I remember from last year, they have some players who kind of shuttle back and forth between the two. I don't think they purely just split the team up, but I could be wrong there.
Oh, that sounds like a logistical nightmare.
I don't know how John Bell does it. That's by far the hardest part of his of what he does.
It's bizarre. Let's talk a little volleyball. They surprised us with a new commitment for the 2024 class. Justina Asamoah, a 6-foot middle blocker from Lockport Township High School in the Chicago area. She also plays basketball and runs track. She also played for the UNO Volleyball Club. Beatty called her a tenacious player who brings a physical presence high above the net. Pete, that's going to do it for the week. This is going to be the busiest off season. We're obviously going to have to decide when we're going to switch to Wednesday release days.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's a lot, Zach. I mean, this is the third week in a row we're going to have over 90 minutes of just men's basketball coverage. Pretty incredible. And we're going to have more next week. I think it'll probably slow down a little next week. Maybe we can catch people up on what women's soccer has done this spring. I do also want to let people know it is possible to shuttle them back and forth between those two meets because they're 30 minutes apart. In Indianola, Simpson College is about 30 minutes south of Drake, right in the middle of Des Moines. So I know people were hanging onto their chairs for that one. But yeah, Zach, why don't you take us home?
Well, I wanted to bring up some, if you're still listening to this, I want to give you a little inside baseball nugget. We were talking about the length of the podcast, and we hit a listener drop at the hour and a half mark. And Pete goes, maybe we should move the ad read because it signals the end of men's basketball. I said, look, if people are listening to us for 90 minutes on men's basketball, I'm good with putting the ad read right there and telling people when to sign off. But yeah, thank you. Like, I'm still shocked by the amount of people that listen to this all the way through, Pete.
Well, what we should do is, like, if next time we do a giveaway or something like that, we're going to put it in the middle of, like, you know, baseball and softball, like,
just
we're gonna,
randomly
we're gonna put it toward the back of the show, to force people to listen to the whole thing. Not that that would actually work on everybody, but yeah, we'll get clever with it.
All right. Well, that's going to do it, for this week. Don't forget to like, rate, subscribe, comment, please comment. Share. And if you can get Robbie Avila on the podcast, help us out. We'd love to have him. Thanks everybody for listening. As always, Pete, go Bills.
Go Bills.